Vermont Conversation with David Goodman is brought to you by Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and by Stowe Cider, Green Mountain Power, Concept 2, Let's Grow Kids, The Alchemist Brewery, and by UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, as well as nearly 700 business members of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Today is the first day that the legislature and legislators return to Montpelier, and along with them come numerous advocates for social, economic, and environmental justice, who are going to be fixtures around the State House over the next few months, pushing a variety of different goals and issues. We've been having a roundtable with leaders of some of these advocacy groups. We were talking with folks from VBSR, VPIRG, and Vermont Conservation Voters. In this half hour, we're joined by Kate Logan, the Director of Programming and Policy for Rights and Democracy, Vermont, and James Lyle, who's the Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union, Vermont. Kate, I'd like to begin with you because you've had a busy day. Just as the new legislators are getting sworn in, you've been engaged with the People Power Lobby. Tell us what that is.
That's right. Thanks, David. Today has been a busy day, and despite some really bad travel conditions for folks, we had a full house in room 10 of the State House today for a couple things. At first, Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman, who is one of our closest partners in the State House and, a people's champion, kicked the day off at 9:30 with a strong message for his constituents to make sure that they're staying engaged, building relationships with their legislators, getting into the State House to sit in at committee meetings, and recognizing that with a citizen legislature like we have in Vermont, it is an opportunity for people to influence the path that legislation takes, because legislators don't have large research staffs to help them out on every issue. And then we followed that up. I co-facilitated along with Chloe White from the ACLU Vermont and Colin Robinson from Vermont NEA, a people's lobby training, which is just essentially a citizen lobbying training. We walk through people through what the legislative process looks like, what to do to prepare for having a meeting with a legislator, and then what an ideal meeting would look like. And then we wrapped up the morning with a panel of over 10 grassroots organizations and advocacy organizations throughout the state who all have a pretty strong human rights focus to hear what their legislative agendas are for this year and let folks know who their point people in the State House are as we launch a people's lobby and make sure that our members and impacted people from our communities know that we're here in the State House not just to lobby our legislators, but to help them learn how to build relationships with their legislators.
Kate, can you talk a little bit about what the policy priorities and legislative priorities are going to be for rights and democracy, and just remind listeners what rights and democracy is?
Sure. Rights and democracy was founded in 2016 as a C3 and C4 organization. So we both do policy research and public education, as well as issue advocacy, lobbying, and some political and electoral work. We're a member-based organization. We have a growing communications list of around 25,000 folks throughout the state of Vermont. So 25,000 supporters in our membership. And we are committed to promoting human rights and a true democracy, so that we have communities where everyone can thrive and has the freedom to thrive. And so we do our work in a number of different ways. Primarily, we build our membership through issue campaigns by meeting advocates and communities, as well as people who are impacted by the issues that we're organizing around. And then I serve as the state house liaison in Vermont. We do similar work in New Hampshire. And we are in the state house not just to advocate on our organization's behalf, but also to connect those people who are being touched by our issue campaigns and our public education programs, and get them in here to do their own engagement with their legislators. So then this year, just like the last legislative session, two of our top issues going into 2019 and 2020 will be to increase the minimum wage in Vermont. The bill that was passed last session would have increased the minimum wage slowly over the next several years to $15 by 2024. Another bill that was passed last year would have instituted a paid family and medical leave insurance program that would have benefited every employed Vermonter. Those bills were vetoed by Governor Scott. And this year, we are hopeful, we're optimistic that we can get those bills through this year by building a strong veto override majority of support for both raising the minimum wage and passing paid and family and medical leave insurance. On the minimum wage side, we organized around this issue with a coalition of over 30 organizations who've signed on as Raise the Wage Coalition members. And on the paid family and medical leave insurance side, we organized as a organizing partner with the Family Coalition, which again has over 25 member organizations.
So we're
very optimistic about those two issues. And we've got a few other things that we're strongly promoting in this legislative session.
So just taking the Raise the Wage campaign, so it gets vetoed by Governor Scott. How do you take another run at it this session? Do you have anything different that you'll be doing to try and get this across the finish line and either not vetoed or have the veto overridden? And what indication do you have from Governor Scott about the $15 wage in this session? Have we heard from him on this?
We have not heard from Governor Scott on this. Looking forward to hearing his comments at his inaugural address. As we understand it, this is not a policy that he supports. The promise of all the organizing that a multiple number of organizations, including political parties, the Democratic Party and the Progressive Party, did over this past electoral season was to bring in a slate of House of Representatives of folks who are supportive of raising the minimum wage in Vermont. We wish we could win the argument with the governor and bring him over to our side on this particular issue, but we do know that well over 70% of Vermonters do support raising the minimum wage to $15 in 2024, and we also know that a supermajority of our legislators likely do as well.
Okay, well, let's turn now to James Lyle, the executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union in Vermont. James, welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. I want to start before asking you about some of the priorities that you have. You've just had a big win in the Vermont Supreme Court. Talk about the case that the ACLU just won and why it's significant.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, so the case that we just received a decision in on Friday, the case of Gregory Zello versus State of Vermont, is a case that we've been litigating for the past 4+ years. On behalf of a young man, an African-American man named Gregory Zello, who was stopped by a Vermont State Police trooper in the Rutland area back in 2014, on a pretext is pretty clear from the facts that this was a case of racial profiling. The trooper made him get out of his car, confiscated his car, made him essentially hitchhike back into town in the middle of winter. First on the basis that there was snow covering his license plate, which wasn't a crime at the time, then on the basis of the alleged basis of the smell of marijuana being in the car, marijuana, of course, having been legalized. So we sued on behalf of Mr. Zullo, and after a long battle, finally taking it all the way up to the Vermont Supreme Court, the court handed down a unanimous decision on Friday. They completely vindicated Mr. Zullo, that established clearly for the first time that under Article 11, people can sue the police, sue the government for unlawful conduct, including racial profiling. So you can sue for money damages. The state and state actors are not immune under our Constitution. That is a landmark and historic ruling in and of itself. In addition, the court went on to say that the stop of our client was unconstitutional, the seizure of his car was unconstitutional, and that marijuana by itself, the smell of marijuana by itself, does not give probable cause to do to anyone what this state trooper did to our client, Greg Zullo. So it was a resounding victory and an historic one. And for anyone who cares about government accountability, police accountability, or racial justice, our briefing was joined by a coalition of an amicus brief was signed on by a coalition of racial justice organizations across the state, talking about the experience of people of color in Vermont, including being stopped disproportionately, searched disproportionately by police. It's a huge victory for all of those advocates and for really all Vermonters in terms of government accountability and racial justice. So it's a big win, and we are still celebrating it.
So in practical terms, what does this mean that Vermonters can do now that they couldn't do before this decision?
Well, if their rights are violated, they can sue. I mean, the government was arguing essentially that it was immune. The court said if the law is clearly established, or if plaintiffs, this is new, if the plaintiffs can, in a lawsuit against, say, a police agency that racially profiles, can show bias, that can put forward evidence that it was motivated by bias, that they can prevail. And so, I mean, it gives people who have been wronged, people whose rights have been violated, an opportunity to vindicate those rights. And, you know, unfortunately, at the U.S. Supreme Court, we've seen a steady chipping away at the ability of litigants and people whose civil rights have been violated to sue. To win justice and really a closing of the courthouse doors to many of those cases. Some state Supreme Courts around the country and now including Vermont's have gone in the opposite direction to say, no, nobody is above the law. The police are not above the law. And we're not going to turn a blind eye to racial profiling. And so, again, it's really a landmark ruling and one that everybody should feel really good about and you know, moving forward, I think it's an important step forward in the fight for racial justice in the state.
So talk about what some of ACLU's priorities are going into as this new legislative session starts.
Yeah, so really quickly, you know, the ACLU is a nonpartisan membership organization. We work on a wide range of civil rights and civil liberties issues, really everything under the sun. To advance and protect the liberty of all Vermonters, and that includes our work in the State House, where we typically testify on dozens of civil liberties-related bills every session and track many others. This year, one of our top priorities will again be advancing the goals of our Smart Justice Vermont campaign by advancing criminal justice reform legislation. So just a little quick background on that. About a year ago, the ACLU launched Smart Justice Vermont, with a goal of reducing our prison population by at least half, ending our dependence on out-of-state prisons, and eliminating the racial disparities that pervade our criminal justice system. Vermont's prison population has doubled over the past three decades, and that comes at great human cost and also great cost to taxpayers. And the legislature has made a lot of progress, admirable progress, in reversing that trend over recent years. But Vermont still currently incarcerates around 1,700 people, including 700 individuals who are held past their minimum release date, the date on which they're theoretically eligible to be released. And, of course, more than 200 are imprisoned in a private out-of-state prison in Mississippi. As we know, Vermonters living with addiction and mental illness are often incarcerated in lieu of receiving the treatment they need or effective treatment, and they don't receive that in custody. And so despite the progress that we've seen at the legislature in recent years, Vermont's rate of incarceration actually increased in 2017 slightly. So continued progress is by no means guaranteed if we don't make a concerted and sustained effort. And that's what this campaign's about. And judging from the response that we've received statewide over the past year, that's exactly what Vermonters want. They want a smarter, fairer criminal justice system. And so one of the bills that we're working on specifically and supporting this session is called the Justice Transparency Act. And that would require Department of Corrections, the courts, the state's attorneys, and the police to collect and report reliable data on Vermont's criminal justice system. And that may seem like a simple thing, but, you know, a lot of data is collected, but it is not consistently aggregated and reported in a way that policymakers or the public can make use of it. One of the reasons to do this is to identify the sources of racial disparities in our criminal justice system. There's a lot of frustration every year from legislators and from the public about our inability to pinpoint or identify where these disparities are being generated. What are the sources of racial disparities that are some of the worst disparities in the nation? And so it would help. This bill is geared towards digging into that puzzle, also hopefully help to identify geographic disparities, which counties use a disproportionate share of taxpayer dollars, possibly by over-relying on incarceration as the solution to our problems when we know it's not. But the bottom line is Vermont needs a systematized, regular reporting system like other states have, and not the kind of ad hoc, inconsistent reporting that we currently have if we want to pursue better policies and get better outcomes. Other criminal justice bills, juvenile justice, there have been major gains. Senator Sears and others have advanced really groundbreaking juvenile justice reforms in recent years. We're hearing that from at least some quarters a desire to change or possibly roll back some of those things. Possibly some state's attorneys are concerned with how these reforms are going. We spent a lot of this year talking about the importance of state's attorneys and the importance of holding them accountable. And so we're going to be monitoring juvenile justice and encouraging people who care about those kinds of reforms to follow the positions of the state's attorneys at the legislature and remember that they're elected officials just like local representatives and they're accountable to the voters. So, those are some examples. There's a number of other things, second look legislation, expanding expungement to get people who have not reoffended, get a clean record. There's a sentencing commission that we hope to be engaging with over the coming year, and also looking at problems with prison conditions. That's going to be a lot of it. Of course, there are many other priorities for us outside of criminal justice. I'd be happy to speak to those if there's time.
That's a good overview. I also want to bring Kate Logan from Rights and Democracy back into the conversation. Kate, one issue we have not heard any of the other groups focusing on that I know that RAD has been a front burner issue for is health care reform, and whether it's single payer health care or what is being done to advance health care reform?
That's a great question. Our members have had a difficult time deciding where they want to land on health care, and we're trying to keep good track of what we think is possible in the Vermont State House. There are so many battling priorities for ways that we want to increase access to human rights within the state of Vermont, and most of those have a price tag attached. And we know that we have a governor who has stated that he refuses to increase our spending through new taxes or fees. So that means that every new right we implement, this means we're borrowing from one right to pay for the protection of another. So it's a difficult position that we're in right now in the state. And so I'd say right now where we're at with within the state legislature is that we're going to be monitoring what is possible in this biennium. On the national level, our members have signed on to the National Improved Medicare for All campaign. And then more sort of long with a longer term focus, we have also started a health policy work group that meets on a regular basis to try and form a, you know, 1, 5, and 10 year roadmap for getting to single payer, which is our members' policy commitment where healthcare is concerned.
Okay. Well, James Loyal, I'm wondering how the for the ACLU, and I should note, in the interest of disclosure, I'm a board member of the ACLU of Vermont. How is the new dynamic in the State House with the veto-proof Democratic majority going to affect your work?
Well, you know, I think it remains to be seen. Obviously, we, alongside Rights and Democracy and many other partners, we're going to continue advocating for, you know, all of the things that Kate just mentioned for Vermont that works for everyone, whether it's minimum wage, paid family leave, you know, other things that were vetoed. And we, you know, we hope that those bills will be reintroduced and pass and make it into law this time. But, you know, you never know how things are going to work out, how you still need a veto-proof majority, and I don't know, you know, on all of the bills that were vetoed or on other initiatives how the politics might shake out. We're certainly hoping that the legislature, as always, pursues an ambitious agenda. Vermont needs to do so much more. It needs to invest in these things. The austerity budgets are doing a great disservice to the state. And it's time to make investments in people and families and communities and not just hovering in this state of austerity. Because, I mean, that is financially irresponsible.
Okay, well, I think we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. I want to thank you both, Kate Logan, Director of Programming and Policy for Rights and Democracy, and James Lyle, the Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Vermont. Thanks to both of you for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks so much, David.
Thank you, David.
All right, well, that does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. You can hear this and all shows at vermontconversation.com and sign up for our podcast wherever you do that. And we'll be back next Wednesday at 1 with another Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Thanks so much for listening. The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, ski erg, and bike erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as Salvation Farms, which nourishes Vermont by distributing produce farmers can't sell. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable childcare in Vermont to better support our children, families, community, and economy. Green Mountain Power, delivering clean, cost-effective, and highly reliable power to customers and offering cutting-edge products and services to reduce costs and carbon. The Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, proud B Corp using the power of business to support a clean environment and economic opportunity for all. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. And by Stowe Cider, with crisp, clean, and creative award-winning flavors. Visit the tasting room in Stowe or buy Stowe Cider throughout New England, upstate New York, and Washington, D.C. as well as nearly 700 business members of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit.